on? Are we live?
Yeah.
Cool.
Fuck it.
I didn't even drive here, so I don't.
Yeah, I drove Mason.
So, all right. What are you? Can you talk about what happened? How did you lose your car?
Oh.
Can't really discuss.
So, my girlfriend and I live in a condo, right? It's a one-car garage, and then you have a driveway. So whoever's in the garage, whoever wakes up first and goes to, say, the gym in the morning.
Takes
the other car, right? So as you're in the development that we live in, it was about like 85% done, right? So they're still doing construction. Well, the side gate, which is only for residents and like commercial vehicles, doesn't open up till 7 a.m. So these commercial vehicles, these big construction trucks and these landscaping trucks, they would just park in the turning lane in front of the gate. So if you're pulling out to go across the street, and that, so there's a turning lane, a middle lane, and then a left turning lane. Because of how they're parked, you can't see the people.
Anything
that are coming.
That's coming?
Yeah,
okay.
You can't see anything. So started to pull forward to make a left turn, and a car was coming. So she clipped that car. Luckily, no one got hurt.
All right, that's good.
Yeah, luckily. But my car was totaled. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, the other car was totaled. The other car was way worse.
Was this the Civic?
Accord.
Accord? Okay. Yeah. Oh. Oh, shit.
Yeah. Middle class individual. But, yeah, so then just looking at it, I'm like, you know, I'm working from home. I have the bicycle. All I do is read and go to the gym. I can ride my bike. Worst comes to worst, I'll call Matt Reed. And
I live like 2 miles away.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's what happened today. Picked him up. He was sitting out on the fence reading a book as I pulled up.
Were you really?
I mean, no. Yeah, basically, in a way.
Fucking dork.
So my girlfriend's on the East Coast right now visiting her family.
Oh, so she has the car.
So she has the car, so I'm carless right now. So okay. I'm like a different era, yeah, you know, 100 years ago.
From where you live, man, though, you can go to that Publix, you can go to work and back to your house on a bike. No
I
problem.
Know, but have you been outside at like 12 o'clock in the afternoon?
No, I have been. It's hot out there. Just don't do things at 12. Do them real early or real late.
Dude, you go there. If I'm in the mood for ice cream and I go to that Publix and get back, the thing's going to be soup.
True.
It's good for your diet plan. There's no ice cream to be had.
Yeah.
I'd say I have ice cream, but yeah.
Do you put it in a little basket?
I don't have a basket on the bike. I probably get one. I'd be looking like a homeless person with the bags on the side.
Looking like a snack.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, Mason.
But no, like even if I wanted to get a car right now, it makes no sense to buy a car. Yeah. Matt Reed, what are your thoughts on that?
No, they're very expensive.
Why do you think that is?
There's a lot of different reasons, but inflation, microchips, electric vehicles.
You mean the microchips that they plant in your head? Is that in competition with the car?
Yeah,
you know,
they're
ones
making people
the
not want to buy cars.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, no, man. There's
George Soros, man.
There's not a lot of cars out. It's just typical supply and demand. Not enough cars. Too many people want cars, so they just...
Yeah, dude. What's like the latest stuff that's going on with that? I know that the past year and a half has been just like pandemonium for car prices. You would think that in the middle of like a pandemic, you would have like prices drop out, but things are like double the price.
Yeah, no, it's just, and that's what it is. It's just easily said, it's supply and demand. It's just there's half the amount of cars that we had at one time, and more people want cars and. I think, too, it's like people panic that things are starting to happen, so they want to rush out like, oh, I need a new car. I need this. And then it just depletes, you know, the supply more. But then on top of that, people realize, like, okay, you're going to pay this much for this
Unit.
Then it's might as well just keep charging those prices.
Like one example would be like if your girlfriend just like totals your car and you panic and you're like, oh my God, how am I going to get this fucking ice cream home soon?
Yep.
I got to buy a car right now.
It does get me out of a lot of situations. So it is kind of a perk, honestly, right now.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why? Like what situations? Well,
you ever know some people that you know, they invite you to do something, you really don't want to do it. Hey, you know what? Paige is at the gym right now. I don't have a car. So I'll hit you up next time.
I'm outside your house.
Well, yeah. So no, well, and that, I mean, that's on coming to pick me up. It's another story.
On the way in, Mason told me something very cool that he's done. How many books you've read in the last year?
Dude, I've read over.
Hold on. Guess how many books he's read in the last year?
Since the start of COVID or in
Since the start of COvid.
Since the start of COVID. So that's a year. Yeah. Year and a half, yeah. Basically. I'll say you've read 136 books.
That's, I'm flattered, but not that high.
All right, 76 books.
No, you're closer to the 136.
What the fuck?
That's like 105. It was like 105.
Which is nuts, man. I don't think I've read that many ever.
Might not have ever read that many ever.
Yeah.
You probably have. You just never counted it. But
it's a lot of books, dude.
That is a lot of books.
Well, I had to do some like stupid. I shouldn't say stupid because it's for work. But it was like it was like what's a fun fact about you? And I was like,
I'm a bit of a book.
Yeah, I just said I was like, I read over 100 books, and then I was like, wait, am I just making that up? And I actually went back and counted. I was like, oh crap, it is over 100. So
well, you've read over 100 books. Just you've read way more over 100 books.
Oh, yeah. But some of those books, though, I've reread, though. Like, take, Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. Like, I read that when I was, like, 20, 21 for the first time, and I was like, yeah, this is stupid. But, you know, that's something, I don't know. Certain things you should reread as you, when you're
this doesn't
different
suit
stages.
Daddy's needs. No, thanks.
It's like definitely not the type of book I was thinking about it was going to be, but
yeah, I thought it was going to teach me how to meditate. You know? Dude, the Stoic shit is really fucking interesting. Let's do this for the camera.
For the book club, right?
For the book club, we're reading Lives of the Stoics, or at least I am.
Yeah.
This is borrowed from the Masonic Prater Library, but
I will be getting it next.
Dude, it's super interesting going through this stuff and learning about it. I just finished the Cato chapter.
Oh, that's my boy.
Yeah, he came up like, I don't know, what, 100, 200 times in that other book we read. So yeah. It was cool to actually like go through and see what he actually did in like a historical sense and the kind of person that he was. But, excuse me. Oh yeah, that's good content right there. For those of you listening at home,
it's not content; it's art.
Oh fuck, dude. Yeah, but no, this stuff's cool, man. It's cool to see the arc of everything that happened. It is very similar to like what's going on now, just like the corruption and all that kind of stuff.
At the Republic.
Yeah, but it does. I don't know. Part of it, I was thinking about this the other day. Is like. Learning some of this historical stuff is like you could either look at this and be like, it's such a long cycle of time and it almost seems like it's gonna happen no matter what, like these large cycles of things rising and falling. Like you could either be like nihilistic about it, or you can kind of be like, all right, set free by it a little bit, because I don't know. It seems like we're in kind of that time of like America being on like this teetering point, and you don't know what could happen here. Similar to Rome is like, you don't know what will happen, but I don't know.
I mean, you could argue that and, take the United States history, for instance, that, you know, from, George Washington being president to today, yeah, things are pretty tough and bad, I would say, in some of the commentary that's going on between folks. But I mean, if you look at the history, I wouldn't say it's any worse than some of the stuff that was going on in, say, the 60s or, I don't know, leading up to the actual Civil War, like, you know, where they actually did then fight each other.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I think part of that is, though, is that people don't know how to really have a conversation anymore. Or their first instinct now is to go right at, for an argument. Like I had some freaking kid the other day. He was studying economics and I was talking to him about like legit asking him questions. And I was like, well, what are your thoughts on this? Well, okay. Interesting. Okay. What are you studying about it? What got you interested in that? Like I was actually kind of, but I guess my second level questions, like, well, what are your thoughts on this specific issue? Took it as, oh, this guy's trying to challenge me. This guy's trying to argue with me.
Really?
Yeah, I wake up 2 days later. I got like 9 messages on my Instagram because I don't really have social media. And I'm like, okay. And then.
Oh, you were going back and forth with him on.
I wasn't even necessarily. It got to the point where I just said to him, I was like, look, I don't know where you thought this was like a debate or a disagreement. Like, I was actually genuinely interested in what you were talking about.
Yeah.
But now I'm at the point where it's kind of getting annoying. And I wouldn't necessarily feel like an ass, but it got to the point where I just said to him, I was like, look, I actually don't even care anymore about this conversation. I actually do not value your opinion at all. Have a good day. I'll talk to you later. But
that's the problem, man. There's no emotion in the words when you type stuff over in social media. So it's like, you really don't know how somebody's coming across.
Well, it's also like we were having a discussion face to face and then.
Oh, so you were talking to him, and then
yeah,
later on,
and then
he, was like,
he blew me up by the on, way. Yeah, and it was like, and that's why I was like, I don't know where you thought that this was a disagreement at all, yeah. like
having a conversation about things.
I was hoping you were going to be my dad,
but you know, I think people's first instinct is to just, you know, attack.
That's actually interesting because the first instinct wasn't to attack in person. But maybe on social media, it was like
easier to attack somebody when you're not face to face. Yeah, easier to write something down about somebody.
I hate social media. You know,
tell us how you feel.
I really hate it. I think that's like the worst thing for people.
We're pulling this for Instagram.
I mean, yeah. Well, I think it's like anything else. It's a tool. It's however you use it. But at the same time, like these social media companies are. Their product is to keep you on the platform.
It's addicting.
Yeah. You know, that's how they do it. I mean, I don't have TikTok, but like, look at TikTok. Like, they've perfected it so that, you know, every video or whatever you see is going to be the same stuff you like all the time. So it's a time waster.
Instagram kind of has that TikTok thing built into it now, the little videos, and you get going on those.
Yeah. Yeah. You get going China. On those. Yeah. You're going on those and then you look at the clock and it's like, what happened to 30 minutes?
It's terrible, dude.
Dude, that's why I got rid of all that stuff in the first place a while ago. Like after I stopped doing opposite states, I deleted Instagram, I deleted Facebook all off my phone. I always have it for like whatever reason, just so you have it. But I had to put, I don't have Facebook on my phone, but I put Instagram back on there. I've been pretty good at not getting sucked in, but actually LinkedIn has been really like sucking me back in.
LinkedIn's changed.
Has it?
I think so.
How so?
I think people post stuff that used to go on
Facebook,
very much more like opinions, like if you agree on this topic or political stuff. Like,
it's definitely becoming less like professional. But I don't think it's a terrible thing.
I don't think so either, but it's also like, what if you disagree with something on there? You know?
And then you get in like this political kind of argument.
Exactly. That's not the place to get into an argument. Facebook is the place to get into an argument.
Yo, you know what I was thinking about actually? Is I think that like, baby boomers actually use social media more correctly than younger people. Like if you think about older people that go on there and use it, they like are sucked in while they're using it. They post all kinds of like kind of crazy thoughts, but they'll also like post pictures about things that they're doing. And then they'll just like put random things like, so-and-so is a Nazi. And then they'll just like get off and they'll like go get dinner or something like that.
I think the baby boomers are probably more addicted, but they're like 5 years behind like younger folks.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's almost like they're using it more how it was like intended to be used. Like, put up a picture. But, this is my grandson. Yeah. Also, Trump that was fucking stolen, and then Biden fucking, you know.
But think about
if you don't not vaccinated, you should be dead. I don't care.
Think about Facebook, like, I don't know, 10 years ago, like the chat. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, okay, you had IM.
It was like LinkedIn chat.
Yeah, but LinkedIn didn't have that chat originally. That at least I don't remember.
No.
I remember Facebook had like...
Like the messenger?
Yeah.
But it was before it was like a separate thing. It was like
you could just go in there and just message somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have like, you know, it would basically be IMing them.
Yeah.
And then you had like the statuses were like you say what you're doing and all that stuff or where you're going, which was like now I think, what is that? Like, I mean, that's Twitter, right? You just...
I don't have Twitter.
I don't have it. Yeah.
I barely have it. I should be using it for my business, but I don't know. I don't know. It seems like a shitstorm.
Yeah, I think a lot of them are. And if this the whistleblower girl, if the stuff she's saying is true, I mean, it's basically their algorithms are geared toward to get the so-and-so's a Nazi stuff to pop up on your feed, so you have a reaction versus. My grandson just graduated high school photos. You know, it's...
Are they gonna?
You know, George Soros can be a Nazi and your high school, your grandson can graduate high school. These aren't mutually exclusive things.
Is Facebook in trouble right now? Are they going through like a lawsuit?
Yeah. But people are thinking it's like a whole planned thing.
Like the outage and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about that last week.
But... Yeah. Like right before that outage, there was a 60 Minutes segment that aired, and there's a whistleblower who, I don't know what she did, but basically she took a lot of like Facebook research that they were doing themselves on, okay, how can we get people to stay on the platform longer?
So it was Facebook employees.
Yeah. So if like Facebook, like every company, they have like product development teams where they'll see what's working. They'll do research. But some of the research that they were doing was say like, okay, there's a 20% increase in teenage girls having suicidal thoughts for being on the platform.
Who cares?
But you know, it was, but then Facebook to the public would be saying, oh, there's no evidence of that.
Yeah. So they were seeing
these things,
the results, but they're just like, oh no.
Yeah. Or, like, take, I think the her big thing was, and of course it goes into the political arena, is, you know, going into, like, the election campaign, the misinformation, or, you know, flagging hate speech and things like that. Well, it turns out, like, their system, like, does not work at all, and there's actually, like, if you're, I don't know, who's someone, like, super famous... Not Trump, but like
Matthew McConaughey.
If you're Matthew McConaughey and you go on Facebook Live, like the video thing, and you start on a racist, sexist rant or something like that, you know, because it's Matthew McConaughey, he's not going to go by the same rules as if you're DeSchmo doing the exact same thing. Your account's going to get banned, but Matthew McConaughey has such a big platform. He'll get people to go on Facebook. He'll get people to do that. We're going to let it slide.
Because they want the traffic.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, it's all about money, you know? And how does Facebook make all their money? Because it's a free platform, if you think about it. It doesn't cost, you don't have to pay to be on Facebook. So how do they make their money?
Well, how do they make their money?
So you sell your data.
Yeah, it's data advertisement sales, ads.
Yeah.
But the thing that I was wondering about is, I heard that, you know, like, oh, this could be the end of Facebook or all that stuff. But part of Facebook is like they've got a whole marketplace. Like they do have like a whole e-commerce section of the system, I think.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, with a platform that size, it's got to be generating at least hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue.
Yeah, but they're like a $1 trillion valued company.
You're talking about like Facebook Marketplace where you can buy and sell things like your.
Yeah, but I think there's some sort of like e-commerce
do with Facebook
aspect though, that you can like buy stuff and pay for, and then they take like a chunk of it.
Oh, I'm sure like bands probably put like merch and stuff up there, and then they can sell through Facebook. But
yeah. I don't know.
Well, it's the same thing with Google.
Yeah,
you know they just sell your searches, your data. That's it. I mean, that's where a lot of the revenue comes in. But you could, I mean,
well, they got the ad. Well, I guess that basically ads for them are basically selling your data.
Yeah. I mean, and their algorithms are set up so that you are accessing certain things. It's, you know, what pissed me off actually really bad the other day? So I was talking to a client.
What?
I was talking to a client and they're asking me about a certain vendor.
Okay.
Right? Never heard of this vendor. So I Googled search it. Now, no matter what I go on, I get ads for this freaking vendor about their products and all this stuff from one Google search.
Mm-hmm. Saw you coming, man.
Oh, it's just like, are you kidding me? Like,
no, they're not kidding.
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, I don't know. I think consumers need to have their data privacy back in way.
So, what is this? What does that mean for people to not have that privacy? Like, I get worried about it, but I don't know. Like, I don't know what that actually means. You know, I worry the kind of big brother type stuff and just like, you know, play out things in my imagination to the nth degree. But what are some like the real practical dangers?
Think about when we were kids. What was the way that they tried to sell you, pestered you all the time?
Like TV ads and then say like
you. Telemarketers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So just, it's. I mean, it's honestly, in my opinion, it's the same business strategy. It's just on the internet now.
Yeah.
So you can't watch a 30-second YouTube video without two 15-second ads.
Yeah.
I mean, think about how much spam emails you get in a day. Where just delete, 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 delete. And it's third-party affiliates that they sell that information to.
Well, that's a big reason why if I'm on a site or something and they ask for your email, unless it's like a specific work thing, I just put in like a burner email. You know? My one Gmail has like 3,500 unread emails and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, man. When I see that number get big, it makes me, I gotta go through them all.
I don't like this.
Just delete him and start from
It's the Nigerian fresh. Prince reaching out to you, man.
Dude, yeah. Too many
Matthew,
emails.
If you just put a little bit of money in my checking account, I promise I will give you 100 million.
But so here's the thing with this data. So
say it right.
So what? So, and I'm playing devil's advocate, I guess, but so what if somebody gets some of your stuff?
Well, like, that's what I'm asking.
Like credit card information, so like their social security numbers. Obviously, that's a big problem. But like, all right, so I went and looked at like these types of T-shirts. I went and ordered this food from Instacart. Like, okay, what's the problem with, so, I guess, people knowing that information?
So let me ask you this, though. If a company is willing to spend.
Pull this up a little bit.
If a company is willing to spend however many dollars to get that data and you're willing to give it away for free, it's who's in the wrong then. So if they really want it so bad, shouldn't you then
cut out the middleman and just tell them what you like?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, or it's like, hey, you know, Google, I want some free shit or something. Or it's basically if you don't know what the product is, you are the product. That's the adage now. That's the saying.
So what worries me about this stuff is not, it's not like the sale to other companies for the sake of selling to you and marketing to you, things like that. It does worry me in some aspects as these companies get bigger and then these technologies get better at, you know, kind of pinpointing things together so that way they can more easily predict like the kind of things that you may be interested or the places that you might be interested. Yep. But that's just, I think, marketing people and salespeople trying to improve, you know, like cost per click and things like that. But what kind of concerns me is that this stuff is hosted somewhere, right? And that data is somewhere. And let's say you start looking at other technologies that are more like Peter Thiel's thing, like his Palantir. Like, I don't know if this is people overreacting, but there are aspects of that that are very like Minority Report-ish. That is like, look for aspects, look for traits that people have, look for their activities and the things they do. And some of it is to be like predicting.
Can you explain the 2002 movie Minority Report first?
I barely know what it is. I saw a thumbnail on Netflix, but no, I know it's got Tom Cruise.
I get what you're saying. And the part of that is that all this stuff is not being run by humans. That's the thing that you guys have to understand. These are all, it's machine learning and AI algorithms.
But
so the way they improve that stuff, though, is that they have to get more data.
Exactly. Dude, and that's like that side of things is all right. So there's all right. You bring up a good point. There's like two aspects that concern me. It's the AI side, but it in a similar way that it's like governmental, right? Like you have the Constitution. It was written for the fact that people do fucking crazy things, especially when they get power, when they get power over other people.
Yeah, for sure.
So what I get concerned of is not that all this data is aggregated and then people are selling it to you. It's just, you don't necessarily know what kind of shit that people can do with it if it gets to certain kind of people. Like if people want to do certain things and they understand what you do and what you like, your activities, things like that, and they want to use that against you, it only takes the right kind of person or the right kind of group to come along and be able to do that. That's what I get worried with some of this stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The AI stuff, I don't know. It's almost like you could basically make it anything is science fiction to a certain point where the AI gets smarter. They're nowhere,
as far as what I know, they're nowhere near like a Terminator situation with Skynet or something like that.
I also agree. Like, I think some guy had a good point on it. I can't remember who said it, but he's like, people are worried about all these things like taking over our lives, but like your iPhone can't spell something correctly sometimes. Yes. So yep. It's like, yeah,
to Apple's credit, Apple does try to protect consumers' data
the best.
Yeah.
Really,
compare it to like a Google or a Facebook and stuff. That Apple is, and that's like the, if you do research on them, that's like the core of their company. It's all about the consumer. It's about the customer experience. And I mean, I like YouTube because I like independent, you know, people like that are putting together, like, you know, there's channels that I follow that, like, yeah, I'll gladly give them $20 for their content. Like,
yeah, dude, you should check out Chine Productions. There's this podcast.
But you know,
$20 a month.
You know what I mean, though? You know what I mean? And if the algorithm was like, hey, you like this guy so much, have you seen this person?
Those are the good algorithms.
Yeah.
I feel like I like YouTube's algorithm.
Yeah.
It gives me all kinds of good
stuff. Sometimes you get into these things, you're like, why am I watching this?
Yeah.
But you're there and you're watching it, so they might be onto something.
Or the recommended, it's like, no, that's nowhere near what I want, and, you know, I'm just turning it off.
You don't want to know how to turn your online business into a six-figure online business in just 3 months?
Is that the algorithms you get?
Some stuff like that. I get a lot of, do you know who Terrence McKenna is?
The name sounds familiar.
He's like, I don't know what you would call him, but he has all these different lectures online. He died like, I don't know, sometime in the 90s, but he's got all these different lectures about psychedelics and the nature of the universe and like botany and like the shit that he talks about in these lectures is nuts. Like him and Alan Watts, I listen to like at night, dude, late on YouTube.
Who is Alan Watts? I've watched some of his videos and I'm like, it's very interesting, but I don't know who. I've never done the research to figure out like his story. I just watch him talk about philosophy.
Why the fuck are all these people putting videos of Alan Watts?
I'm like, who is Alan Watts?
But who is Alan Watts?
I can't even name one thing that I listen to, like that he talked about. But it's a philosophy. Yeah, he just talks kind of philosophy. Hmm. Very like simplistic though. It's easy to understand.
Okay.
Check him out.
I'll have to look that up.
He's like a Zen. It's like a Zen Buddhist philosophy, but he's like a British guy or something from, I don't know. I think maybe he died in the 80s or 70s or something. But yeah, he's one of those like British dudes that like wears like robes and stuff like that. But he talks about things and the way he talks about it, you're like, that's an interesting way of looking at life. Like, you know, not trying so hard or, I don't know. He said something one time is like, if you like, I don't know, something about gripping too tightly, then you actually lose control or something. So these kinds of like different metaphors and things that make you, that get you thinking similar to how Stoicism does. It's just like a different take on life that probably most people don't have.
Yeah.
So you hadn't considered before.
I mean, I think, this is my philosophy, I guess, my own personal one, is you have to be open-minded to figure out what works for you.
Yeah, for sure.
Because everyone's different. Works for Matt, not necessarily going to work for me.
Vice versa.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm superior. But no.
Well, is that your determined? What did you say, your superior?
Yeah, superior.
To be determined, we'll see.
Good point. So on the superior thing, thank you for the recommendation for The Courage to Be Disliked.
Yeah.
I listened to it. Did you end up finishing it?
Actually, on the way in, I listened to the last 17 minutes. That's me and Mason were arriving here today. He gets in, he goes, what is this? I was like, the last chapter of. And I didn't really even listen to the last 17 minutes because we were talking.
We were discussing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't miss too much, man. It's an interesting book.
Dude, I'll tell you, Audible is cool. There's some books I can listen to, but that book is not one of them. I'm going to have to go back and read it.
Yeah.
You were right, because you're like, it's going to be strange to listen to, and it was.
I'm glad I listened to it, because they actually did a pretty good job at, like, the old guy and the young kid. Like, they had two different voices for it, so it was actually... I don't know. I liked it.
So I was playing it at 1.4 speed, and the kid's voice was still a little too high.
Well, yeah, there you go.
It was like, I don't know.
When I read it, so I was
in a dark place.
I was picturing like the scene, like if I was watching a movie and the voices that they had, and when I was listening to it, that's why I was like, what is this? And then he told me what it was, and I was like, this is not how I would have cast this at all, but you know, that's just me. But
yeah,
well, you would think that it would be like, you would think that it would have like Asian accents because they're from Japan. It's like supposed to be two Japanese people, and it's like an old British guy and then like a young kind of annoying American kid.
Yeah, well, it was surprising.
Yeah, maybe try to read it also, but. I don't know. That's a book that I had to reread like pages because it's so interesting set up that because it's a conversation. It's not like a regular nonfiction book or anything like that. It's, you know, so I'd be like rereading. I had to reread. And I was like, wait, what did this guy just say again? And then, you know, I had to go back to the top.
I would do that with listening to it too.
Yeah.
Like I had to like backwards 30, 30, 30. Like the fuck did he just say?
Yeah. It was interesting.
Did you take anything away from it?
I mean, it was just like, it's another one of those things where it's like, yes, like the most important relationship you can have is the one that you have with yourself, kind of.
Did you think the goals thing was interesting?
Refresh my memory.
That, like, it depends on what you set your goals to be, and then you kind of, like, make that happen, even if you don't, think, you know, even if it doesn't, like, quote, logically make sense or, like, a good goal.
So there was a part I went back, and it was towards the end. He talks about, like, is that the breaking up the tasks?
No, the task thing was, like, very interesting. That actually helped me a lot.
Yeah, when he's, like, talking, because I think I see things in such a full picture. I don't know about you guys, and then you're like, oh, this is going to be hard to finish. But then when you break them up into those little areas and focus on.
Well, I thought it was cool that he had, like, the life tasks thing, you know? Like, the life tasks was interesting because that's one way that you can really it actually – so, like, when he talks in the book, like, the courage to be disliked, he's like, everything about it is, like, encouragement to do something. I never, like, thought of encouragement as, like, gaining courage to do something. I thought it was always just, like – you know, like, recommending or, like, you know, you should do this. Like, encourage it. But it's, like, literally the words, like, encourage. Like, gain courage to do these things. And the kind of the thing I like about it with the separation of tasks is it does split things out so it's not so much on you. Like the perfect example that the kid brings up in the book. I think everybody deals with this in some way. Is, like, your parents' expectations of you. And it's like, that's their, they have their life tasks, and then they have the things that they worry about, and that kind of creeps into your life tasks, which is good probably when you're a little kid because they care and everything. Mm-hmm. Once you get older at a certain point, you got to, like, start putting that line in the sand of, like, okay, that's their thought, but, like, I actually have to do this for me. Like, this is my life task. And then, I don't know, in a way, that's kind of, it, to me, that's, like, encouraging because it starts kind of, like, mentally putting control back into your life.
Yeah, but it's also, to echo that, it's also, if you know what your task is or your job or whatever you want to call it, it's not letting other people's expectations creep in to change that.
Yeah.
So if you have that goal or the vision of yourself of what you want to be, but it doesn't align to, say, your parents or your spouse or whatever, it's, you know, okay, I'm going to handle their dislike at the time to reach the goal, knowing that they'll still love me.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
We kinda, but the real question is, would your parents?
We kind of talked about that last week with Sokolsky.
Yeah.
Just being, like, unequivocally not caring about what anybody else thought about him.
He didn't give a fuck.
None.
Dude.
Yeah.
Have you seen that documentary? We talked about it last week. Just wait for the last week's episode.
Check out hey, if you want to see the podcast, just Venmo Chris $20.
Yeah, send me $20.
It'll be on Spotify and all
we'll those split things. That.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's...
What's the documentary?
It's called...
just talking to the mic.
It's called Struggle. It's about an artist that they thought had passed away, and a Polish artist. You'd love it, man. He came over after, was it World War II?
Yeah.
And all of his...
you guys want to talk about World War II?
Maybe, since you're here. And anyway, so this guy ends up, they think he's dead, and they find him in California. And the guy lived like 5 miles away from this, started doing the documentary on him. And he just has a wild life story and just was really just marched to the beat of his own drum and did a lot of really cool things.
The cool part about it is that, like, he really just lived as an artist, like, and did the things that, like, came to his mind.
Yeah.
Like, he literally had something where he went back to, so he grew up in, like, he was born in Poland, moved to Chicago. His dad sent him back to Poland to, like, go to art school.
When he was, like, young.
Yeah, he was like 11 or 12 or something. And so he's over there and they're like, you're a great sculptor, but you can't be in this school unless you start, you know, working with like some reality images, like looking at things as they are and then like sculpting to that. And like, he was like, I don't need that. And he like unenrolled in school at like 12 years old and was like, I'll just go make my own thing. He clearly pulled the shit from his head, but it's like, some sort of fucking divine type art.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Tapping into something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, check
send
it out.
Send me the
I'll send you some links.
Send some deets.
Send the information.
I'll send it over to you.
Did you finish Squid Game?
Yeah. Squid Games is good. Do you watch Squid Games?
I watched it, yeah.
What did you think?
I liked it. I didn't get the ending.
What didn't you get?
Spoiler alert, skip like based on what I know about our conversation, skip four minutes and work your way back from there.
Is that what the algorithms are telling you?
Yeah, the algorithms told me 4 minutes.
Each topic lasts about 4 to 5 minutes.
All right. Here's what I didn't get, right? So he wins. Then, you know, the old man, I think I kind of thought that was obvious. That
the old I man didn't was, until the end. I was like, whew.
I thought he was in on it or something. Yeah. The part I didn't get was, why did he dye his hair red?
I didn't get that either.
And what is he doing at the end? Is he going to back to play again? I mean, he said something like, he's like, I'm not a horse. Like, he's not going to be someone to be bet on to win it or anything like that. But what is he going to try and be like a badass to take down like the 100 guards that they have with machine guns?
That's what I was assuming.
That's also what I was assuming, kind of like what the cop did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the cop died.
He did take down a lot. He like did a lot of stuff before he ended up dying.
And that the front man guy was his brother, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he didn't know. So wait, was the old guy their grandfather then?
No, they weren't related.
I don't think so.
Okay. The front man was so if that was his brother, he was a winner also. He won the game.
Yeah.
And then they put the winner gets to.
Or maybe he did the same thing that the redhead guy did, where he was like, I'll run this thing, or I don't know. I don't know what the redhead guy, I don't know if he's trying to take it down or if he's trying to, he sees the weird value.
Yeah, that's what's kind of cool about it, though, is that we really don't kind of leave it open-ended and you kind of make your own ending to it.
I don't know if they're going to have a season two.
Dude, they're definitely going to have a season two.
Yes, it is the number one show in the world.
Yeah.
Number one show of ever.
Really?
Yeah, for
Netflix. It was good, man, but not.
You want to know why I think that is? Is think about, so what country is that?
It's
South Korea?
It's an international show.
Yeah. But, so,
and it became the biggest in the U.S. on top of being.
So here's my thinking behind it. So what is like a popular, well, I mean, you take it how you want, but what is a popular U.S. Netflix show? I don't know.
Netflix?
Downton Abbey?
I don't know. Bad. Okay. Like Bridgerton, right?
Never seen it.
Okay. It's like
Breaking Bad or something?
Yeah, Breaking Bad. Let's take Breaking Bad. Outside
we were going to rip you on Bridgerton. Yeah. You were like, oh, I'll go Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Outside of the United States, you think people in South Korea are going to watch that show?
No.
Exactly. But
dude, you'd be surprised. Like, I think the amount I think that the shows and the stuff that's made in the U.S. is more, people outside of the U.S. are more likely to watch it and consume it than people are in the U.S. to consume non-U.S. or international stuff.
Really? Yeah, but I think, I mean, I could be wrong, but I think Netflix's biggest market is still the United States.
Probably.
So if it blows up in the United States, but say not in South Korea or not in Japan or not in, I don't know, Germany, something like that. But if it's a South Korean show that's going to be really popular in South Korea and then it also blows up the United States, it's going to pass the U.S. show. That's what I'm saying.
So, yeah, I think I told you this last week. I read that on somebody's Instagram post, that guy that made Squid Games, I think he'd pitched that idea for 10 years.
Yeah.
A lot of times, and people turn it down, and finally Netflix is like, yeah, we'll give you a shot. And that'd be their number one show.
Well, imagine those pitch meetings. All right, so I've got this scene, right? And the first one, they're playing this game, and this guy gets shot in the head with a sniper rifle, right? And everybody's freaking out. There's 400 people there. And, again, spoiler alert, skip 1 minute. And, okay, and then so they go, and then this robot turns around, and then 200 people get shot by
the
this sniper.
5 minutes.
That was fucking sweet. That was really cool.
Yeah.
It was nuts that they chose to go back too.
That honestly, that whole piece of it that I thought was cool was that they left and then they voted to go back. Yeah. I thought that made the show way better.
Well, it built the characters up because then you're like, they know what's going to happen. They know what they have to go through, and now they're choosing to go back there.
I didn't think that they knew that it was going to be one winner only, though.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think they knew that either.
Yeah.
They just said make it to the end of the games.
Yeah. But I did like that because it just showed, like, hey, you know, would you be willing to die for however many?
What was it, $40 billion or something?
$40 billion, like.
Whatever their currency
is.
Yeah. Which I think I did the math when I was watching. I think it came out to, like, $50 million.
I was going to say, yeah, in U.S. dollars or something.
Yeah. So it's like.
Honestly, you could find 400 people that would put their life on the line and or kill 400 other people for $50 million. There's people that kill people all the time for, like, not that much money.
Isn't it weird that these shows are so popular? Like, Hunger Games is the same deal, and that was a those are huge, huge hits, books.
I mean,
the same premise.
Yeah,
pretty similar.
Mason,
but, uh-huh.
Are you pumped about the new House of Dragon?
Oh, dude.
I didn't mean to change the subject so fast, but.
No, I he needs to finish the books. George R. R. Martin.
George R. R. Martin.
So, yeah,
dude,
you
know, it's over 10 years since the last book. No, it's been 10 years.
I wanted to ask you this because I know you're a huge Game of Thrones guy.
Yeah.
So he didn't finish the books.
No.
And they just blew, like, just.
So that's the most annoying thing about the show. And, you know, next time we talk about this, I might dial Clayton in because.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. We had a routine where every episode we would watch, it'd be like, all right, no girlfriends, no phones in the room.
So you and Mason would just get together for Game of Thrones?
I'm Mason.
Yeah, or I'm sorry, you and Clayton would just get together for...
Yeah, yeah, and it'd be like no talking, nothing. We just watch the show, then we discuss.
Fresh bottle of Astroglide, and that's all.
But, you know, and, you know, he'll say, he's like, yeah, dude, that last season, Mason would just storm out, like, so pissed off. Because, so the guy wrote the books, right? And the best seasons of the show are all the events take place up to the books.
Yeah.
There's a few things that happen that didn't happen in the books that you're like, oh, crap, that's pretty cool. Or that's where that was going. Like the Battle of Bastards, like Jon Snow versus Ramsay, that whole fight, the Hodor scene, like things like that. And then if you watch any, like, the interviews that they had were like, yeah, when George told us, like, Hodor, you know,
hold the door.
Yeah. It's like, okay, so he's still giving you guys, like, the big plot moments. So clearly he told them, like, hey, this is how I envision ending it. Fill in the rest. So then it's like the last two seasons, you're like, none of this stuff makes any sense. There's no, like, and you're like, okay, we have the whole, like, you know, take the hold the door scene. Like, okay, so clearly Bran has, like, some crazy powers where he can alter, like, whatever he does in the past can alter, like, you know, it's like a weird cycle.
Yeah, time cycle.
Yeah. So, but then you don't ever see him again, and then he's now the king at the end of the story. It's like, whoa, what?
Well, it's, like, clear that they rushed through all the stuff because the last few seasons is, like, every episode is, like, yeah, all this happened, and the next episode was, like, a year later or something. It was just the second to last season didn't make, like, any sense to me. I thought some of the stuff at the end, I thought some of the stuff in the last season was pretty cool. Like, a lot of people shit on that, like, night fight scene and everything.
Yeah.
I thought that was fucking sweet.
You know why the people shit on it? It's because they try comparing it to the Lord of the Rings, the Two Towers, Helm's Deep. So if you watch that, it's at night also, but clearly they have, like, a skylight, like, going on, so you can see everything.
I thought that was the point of not being able to see anything.
Yeah,
because,
but as a viewer, you're going to be like, okay.
But that's part of the suspense is, like.
I didn't think it was that dark.
But the
thought it was super dark because if you think about it, if you were literally in a fucking battle scene with literally hundreds of thousands of dead people at night, you would not see a swarm of them coming to you.
The issue is, though, the issue is, again, they compared it to Helm's Deep.
Fuck those people. You know what?
But that's the show. The show people are the one that compared it.
The show people?
Yeah, they said this is going to be better than the battle at Helm's Deep.
But you know what? Fuck those show people too.
So again, they set the expectations to, like, yeah, I remember that the true hardcore fans are, like, mega nerds, and if they're
didn't like the books that were on the bookshelf in that scene when the zombies were inside of the castle.
Yeah. But you know, if you take like some of the stuff that they did with some of the character arcs too.
It was so like, fucking stupid.
Yeah, exactly. So you're like, this has been like you just wrecked everything. So again, like he needs to finish the books because those books are girthy. They're long.
Dude, I read two of the books and then I got halfway through the third one and then I kind of like
Third one's the best one.
I know, but if the only problem with those is if you stop reading for more than like a week, you
probably
after 2 weeks, you're fucking out.
Yeah.
Like I tried like three times to get back into it. You just forget everything.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing that I was telling did we talk about this like briefly? About the new HBO show, and I was like, oh yeah, I already know what happens because
my Instagram, you had posted
which he has like a little short stories that he did, which take place like I think it's 100 years if I remember right before 100 years before the events of the Game of Thrones series, about his name is Dunk and Egg, so that's their nicknames. It's like the Adventures of Dunk and Egg. And
is this the House of Dragon?
No. So give me you learned about beer. That in the main, huh?
Give me that other beer.
No, it's mine, man.
I'll go get you a cold one in a little bit.
But the House of Dragon, what I took out of it, the plot is going to be this like Targaryen civil war where they fight each other with dragons. And
that's what's going to be the elimination of the dragons.
That's what starts leading to them being killed off. A lot of the dragons die.
It's because they like battle with them.
Yeah.
Well, basically all the dragons were dead at the start of Game of Thrones.
They just
had
Khaleesi had the eggs.
Yeah, she just had the eggs.
So you remember like I think it was the second to last season where they had that meeting with them and then they bring out the zombie to show Cersei.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, we'll send you whatever support you. That scene's supposed to take place in what's called the Dragon Pit. So you can see it's ruins. And because of those, that's where they used to store a lot of the dragons when the Targaryens were, and it was huge. Well, during the Civil War, you know, regular people are like, these dragons are evil. So they pulled down the roof and killed like all the dragons in there.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. But yeah, it's the Civil War at that one was called, it's called the Dance of Dragons. Because, you know, when the dragons are fighting, they're basically look like they're dancing.
An old dance?
Yeah.
That's cool. I'm excited for it.
Or the only other option I think it would happen is either that or there's another thing called the Blackfyre Rebellion, which it gets talked about a little bit in the show. And that is so one of the Targaryens.
How the fuck do you're just good at history?
It's not history, dude. When he writes these books, he's writing there's a history like
I understand, but like just the fact that you can retain all this stuff, dude, is you're good at just
my problem
history
is,
in general.
My problem is
even
if
it's fake history.
Yeah, dude, you literally
you're
know
fake
real
history
history
and fake.
My
history.
Problem is if I'm reading something I'm into, I'm like.
Into it.
And if I'm not into it, I have to reread it over and over again.
Yeah.
Until it sinks. But, yeah. The Blackfyre Rebellion.
Cool. Yeah, dude, there's only really two shows that I've, like, been fully invested in. And the first one was Breaking Bad, and the second one was Game of Thrones, dude. When the last season of Game of Thrones, the last two seasons of Game of Thrones was coming out, I was just...
Well, I got a show for you then.
What?
You watch Cobra Kai?
I watched the first episode, the that's like the Karate Kid.
Yeah, you need to watch that show.
Is it good?
Is that good?
That's the best show on TV right now.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
Strike first, strike hard, no mercy.
Mason has good recommendations, so.
Dude, I mean if you like the Karate Kid, and it's good.
Yeah,
it's
fire. All right.
It's
next
funny
on my list.
Yeah.
Show's fire, dude.
It's like so cheesy.
Yeah.
Too. But it's like
good kind of cheesy.
Yeah, if you want a show just to relax and have a little chuckles and watch some karate.
All right, I'll watch it.
Good.
Good.
I'm going to talk about some serious stuff now.
Yeah, what do you got? What do you got for us? What'd you bring
Blow
for us
my
today?
Mind, Mason.
You talked about Poland earlier, right?
Okay.
Cue the World War II.
Well, all right. Give me 10 minutes, all right, to talk.
You give me 10
Wait,
minutes.
Wait, you want a
10-minute we'll
pause
you
while you think?
No.
Yeah,
no,
you
no.
just talking to the microphones, we'll leave.
All right. Yeah.
Chris, basically. Let's set a timer for 10 minutes, and when he gets over the 10 minutes, we just...
Don't knock all off. The water over and pull my fucking cords out.
This,
I would never do that.
Honestly, it could easily go over 10 minutes. But
first, what is this about? Poland?
Poland. It's a country.
Let's hear it.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. Didn't know.
At the
country.
So World War II doesn't happen without World War I.
Okay.
And World War I started because of the Archduke of Austria-Hungary.
Franz Ferdinand?
Franz Ferdinand got
Franz
assassinated.
Ferdinand. Great band.
So if you look at a map of Europe today, like, I mean, it's completely different. But so he gets assassinated, and then this is what kicked off what's called the July Crisis, which is like just diplomatic back and forth. Like, how can we avoid war? What do you guys want?
Yeah.
Well, Austria, Hungary, they go to Germany, who's their ally, and says, hey, you got my back? Germany's like, sure. They give them what's called the blank check, a guarantee, mm-hmm. like, hey, we'll support whatever you guys do. Well, Austria sends like these ridiculous list of demands to this country called Serbia, who they blame for the assassination.
Because that's where the assassination took place, right?
No, it took place in Bosnia.
By
a Serbian national.
Okay.
Yeah.
Serbian nationals killed Franz Ferdinand in Bosnia.
Yeah. Because, like, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the Austrians and the Hungarians, they combined, they made up a majority, but it was a very multi-ethnic empire. So like today it's like Croatia, like parts of Serbia, parts of Romania. Like it was a bunch of parts of Poland. Like Poland wasn't a country. Poland didn't exist at the time, but the Poles were an ethnic group.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to fast forward like 100 years before they partitioned it. So they give these ridiculous demands to Serbia. Well, Serbia has an alliance with Russia, and Russia's like, deny that. We got your back. Well, you know, as a result, Austria starts mobilizing their troops. Serbia starts mobilizing. Russia starts mobilizing. Germany's like, what are you guys doing? If you do anything, we're going to back Austria. So they start mobilizing. Well, Russia also has an alliance with France.
Mm-hmm.
So they start mobilizing, and then France has a weird alliance with England. They're like, yo, got our back? And England's like, no, we don't want to be a part of this.
The only way we've got your back is if they happen to go into this particular section of Europe.
Yeah, Belgium.
Yep.
Yeah. So Germany, like 10 years before, developed this idea called the Schlieffen Plan, which was to...
By Erich Schlieffen?
I don't know his first name.
We'll go with it.
Probably wasn't Eric.
So it was to
Michael Schlieffen.
So basically, like, France had a big defense network on the border with Germany because, again, you know, you have to backtrack 50 years or however many years. Germany kicked, it wasn't even Germany yet, it was Prussia. They kicked France's ass in the Franco-Prussian War, and that's where the German Empire was, you know, founded.
Okay.
Because Germany before then was like a collection of independent states that were all German
Germanic
ethnics.
Tribes and stuff.
Yeah, I went.
Is that what they call it, or is that way earlier?
Way earlier.
Okay,
like thousands. So,
yeah, I was only off by a couple thousand years.
Not that much.
So
barely off at all.
So World War One, you have all these, you know, these basically just aggressive attitudes, just going leading the charge to, like, you know, we need to go to war. We need to go to war. This is how we're going to win. This is how we make them respect us, blah, blah, blah. So Germany does the Schlieffen plan, which marches through Belgium to go into northern France. Well, Belgium was created as a buffer state between France, England, and Prussia at the time after the Napoleonic Wars. And all those countries agreed that Belgium's neutrality is guaranteed by them. So England felt honor-bound to honor that treaty, so they declare war on Germany.
So they went. So the reason why they went to Belgium, if I remember this right, is because, you had all those forts along the France-Germany border,
mm-hmm.
and rather than going and trying to like get past these forts and having a battle like that, they wanted to go north and then come down.
Yeah.
Like, basically behind the
forts.
It
would be the fastest way. So the German plan was, we'll knock France out,
and
then we'll focus on
Russia.
Yeah, okay. Because Russia was, I think, population-wise, it had the biggest army and everything. And they were worried that once Russia got up to speed, like, going with the full war effort, they wouldn't be able to fight both fronts.
Yeah.
Well, they end up fighting, you know, the war on two fronts. Russia gets knocked out from, you know, the revolution, the communist takeover, and that starts Russia's civil war. But regardless, so the peace treaty at the end of World War One, no one was happy in it. You had people like France. So before World War Two, this was the deadliest war in human history.
By like a like
yeah
by
a lot
wow. a lot yeah. lot.
So you had some parties like France that were saying, Germany isn't punished hard enough. And then you had some people like, this is just going to lead to another war. This
isn't that what Woodrow Wilson was saying?
I do remember hearing this. Yeah.
Yeah. Woodrow Wilson, I think, I don't think it was Woodrow Wilson, but I think it was someone else in the British government that said, this isn't a peace treaty. This is a 20-year armistice.
Yeah.
Which
is exactly right.
Yeah, yeah, basically. So fast forward, you know, 20 years. But part of the, so that you got Hitler's rise to power, all that stuff, which he was never elected, by the way. he just kind of just took over. But a lot of the stuff in the beginning of Hitler's rise was just to reverse the Treaty of Versailles. So he built up the military. Germany wasn't allowed to have more than 100,000 troops. He had a lot more than that. They weren't allowed to have troops in, like, the western part of Germany. He marches into there.
What was that called? The
Rhineland.
Rhineland.
Yeah. So he marches in there, and then you have France and England like, okay, it's fine. We don't, yeah, it's fine. We don't want to fight. Because both France and England both lost 1 million men in World War One.
Yeah.
So they didn't want to fight another war. Well, then Germany and Austria, so Austria is a German state. It's German. They're German ethnically. Part of the treaty is they're not allowed to be one country. So he annexes Austria. Then it's, okay, Czechoslovakia. There's German ethnic groups in there. We want what's called the Sudetenland. So they give them that. So, but it, weirdly enough, though, this is like the weird thing where this is when conspiracy people start. So they give Hitler all this stuff. And you got to remember, Poland wasn't a country either. It didn't exist.
Yeah.
After World War One, part of the peace treaty was, okay, Poland is going to be a country.
That happened after World War One?
Yeah. They set up a lot of new countries after World War One.
Yeah.
So Poland is now a country, and Germany is actually split in half. There's a thing called a land called the Danzig Corridor. Hmm. So it's basically East Prussia and Germany. And then you have Poland, you know, part of Poland going thing. And the theory was Poland needs to have access to the sea for trade.
Okay.
Well, Hitler is pissed about that. So
we do not want this Polish to have this access.
But the conspiracy thing is, like, people are like, well, why would they draw the line at Poland? You know, they let all this other stuff go. Why? Because England and France are basically saying, if you declare war on Poland, we're going to declare war on you.
Leading up to World War II?
Yeah.
Hold on. So Who said they were going to declare war on Germany if Germany declared war on
If Poland? Germany attacked Poland, France and England said, we will side with Poland.
Okay.
But they were not in any position to fight or anything. They were slowly rearming.
Poland was or France and
England? France at the time had the biggest army in Europe. But obviously it didn't really work out. But England wasn't ready for a war at all.
No.
So, but England was slowly rearming and building up their war industry. But they drew the line at Poland, which was a lot of people were like,
yeah, so why?
Why this?
So what are the theories?
You're
getting close to your 10-minute mark.
yeah, it gets a lot of conspiracy theory crap, but, I think part of it was they just decided to draw a line in the sand at some point. It's like, you know what, Poland was a pretty strong, nation compared to, say, Czechoslovakia or Austria. So it was, if we're going to fight them, we might as well have, and this is my opinion, we might as well have someone on that side. But Germany and the Soviet Union signed a non-aggression pact, and they invaded Poland also. But obviously...
Russia did. Okay.
But obviously France and England then declare war on Russia, or the Soviet Union. And people are like, well, why didn't they do that? And my theory is if you look at what Hitler was saying leading up to World War II, the communists were his arch enemy. So it's, they signed some mutual assistance to take over Poland and get rid of Poland, wipe it off the map. Now you don't have a buffer state in between two natural enemies. So we just now, and then when France fell, like the next year, that's when Winston Churchill became really famous and was leading, like, we'll never surrender. Like, there's no peace. Like, while you guys exist, like, we'll fight forever. I think he just was looking at, like, they're going to take each other out.
So if the thought was that Poland was a buffer state, right? So if the thought was that they would take each other out, then, like, why then draw the line in the sand at Poland? Because in a way, I'm just thinking, and maybe I'm missing something, but you would think that if you're about to fight a war with the Nazis, who are super aggressive, all the stuff, and you're not in a position to fight it, in a way, selfishly, you might say it would be beneficial for them to take out Poland, because then there would be nothing left but for Russia and Germany to fight each other.
I think also it maybe gave them more time, too, to get ready. The other problem, too, that I think France and England did at the beginning of that war was that they were fighting the last war. They thought it was going to be like World War I 2.0. Yeah. But then Germany does the Blitzkrieg. Yeah. But if you look at World War II, in a way, England was right because they just needed to survive.
Yeah.
And, before Germany invaded the Soviet Union, they were only at war with Great Britain. And it was basically like they were looking at if they invade England, realistically, maybe they conquer the island. But it's a global empire also. Okay, maybe the empire falls apart, but maybe it doesn't. Maybe they go to India, which is one of the most populated places on planet Earth. They just build a new army and come back.
Yeah.
And they have the British Navy is huge. So it's, what is the best way? And then when they invaded the Soviet Union, if you actually look at just by the numbers, the Soviet Union basically won World War II in Europe almost, I wouldn't say single-handedly, but they did most of the grunt work.
What do you mean?
I mean, almost 27 million Soviet Union people died.
Soviet Union people.
I don't know, Russians, Ukrainians, whatever.
Is that a real number?
It's estimated.
Wow.
That's nuts.
And, I mean, most of them are civilians, but the Germans also lost – more soldiers on the Eastern Front than anywhere else.
Really?
Yeah, a German soldier, if they were sent to the Eastern Front, like after the initial push, they almost looked at it as a death sentence.
How many people ended up dying in World War II then?
Including like Asia?
Yeah.
I mean, there's some crazy estimates because I mean you can't it's hard it's to count
twos, yeah.
It's hard to count civilian deaths. But there's like I think the safe estimate is like 80 million people.
That is insane.
Because you have to look at like so not only that what the Germans famously did to civilians with like the concentration camps, but when they were going you have to look at like starvation kills more people than bullets. So if you go into a village and destroy all the crops and destroy everything, what are they going to eat? How are they going to live? How are they going to survive? So it's...
I was watching some movie. I think it was maybe made in the 80s. It's like a black and white movie, but it's from Yugoslavia. And it was like about the Nazi invasion of Yugoslavia. And it just like follows like this little kid through the whole process of like his town being burned and then him going with like, you know, escaping and then going with these like this rebel group and then that group getting captured or round up and they just get like all fucking burned alive. These Nazis like in it, like the Nazis are just like, they're just like drunk and high and shit. And they're just like cattle all these people into a fucking barn and then a bunch of them take like Molotov cocktails basically and just set this thing on fire.
Propaganda film or it's like an actual movie?
No, it was like a movie that somebody made in the 80s just to kind of like highlight what happened. I think it was in Yugoslavia.
Unbelievable.
Or Belorussia or something like that.
Belarus.
Belarus. It might have been there, but yeah, it was one of those movies where you watch it and you're just like, fuck, man, this would have been devastating to be.
Yeah, I mean part of. It's every side did some form of atrocities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the end of the day, like a famous just a I mean obviously the Nazis did a lot of really fucked up shit. But you know, like there's stuff that gets cited like that the Western Allies did, like the bombing of Dresden, for instance.
Yeah.
It had like no strategic value at all. And I think like 50,000 people died. It was just like a civilian.
Just civilians.
Yeah. Or if you look at, you know, when we dropped the atomic bombs, I might be wrong about this, but Hiroshima and Nagasaki like had no military value. But to kind of weirdly defend that also, if you look at some of the battles that we were fighting against the Japanese, they were like fanatics in a way.
Yeah.
Like it would be like a, you know, like the Battle of Iwo Jima, for instance, is a famous one where they had like, I think there's like 30,000 Japanese that were defending the island. They have no air support. There's no ships. They all knew like they're not getting off the island. So what would normal people do? They'd probably surrender. Well, these guys fought basically to like the last man and only like, I think like 20, maybe 200 people were captured alive. But then, you know, you go to Okinawa, which is now like a Japanese homeland. You had the civilians that were committing suicide because the Americans were taking over the island. So it was like, you know, the estimates that they had that if they did a full on invasion of the Japanese islands was that the war would last another 2 years.
Yeah.
It would take like 2 million Americans to invade the islands, and you're looking at 700,000 deaths or something like
that. Well, that's kind of like the classic defense of dropping the atomic bombs, right? What isn't that it? Is like basically we've got these two options. We can basically drop one bomb on a somewhat industrial area because we know that if we send people in, it's going to cost us many lives, and then also, we're not bombing Tokyo that has the most civilians.
Well, it's also, too, is who else was a convenient ally for World War II that was no longer going to be an ally at the end of the war? The Soviet Union.
Russia, yeah.
Yeah. So you drop the atomic bomb on
show
Japan.
Power.
You show, like, hey, we got this weapon. don't do anything we don't like.
Whoa.
Shit.
Yeah, because, I mean, so George Patton is probably, like, arguably one of the most famous American generals, especially in World War II. He's quoted as saying certain things. Like, when they were into Germany, they were basically, he was saying some, like, anti-communist stuff. Because before World War II, the Soviet Union was basically by themselves. They're on their own little island. Like, no one liked them. No one wanted to do business with them.
Well, did you know that fucking Germany had Joseph Lenin as a...
Yeah.
They had John Lennon. Vladimir Lenin. Yeah. Vladimir Lenin as
they sent him back to Russia.
Yeah, he was like a prisoner. I don't know, like a prisoner of war, but like a political prisoner. And they sent him on a train back to Russia to start creating dissent within the country and help uproot, like, basically create like a communist revolution within the ranks during World War One. That way the Eastern Front during World War One would be easier for Germany.
The first revolution that happened in Russia, the Soviets weren't in charge of it. But those idiots that ran the provisional government decided to continue the war, which was the most unpopular thing, which basically caused the revolution in the first place.
Oh,
so there's technically two revolutions in Russia that happened.
Wait, so there's one before or after the Romanov?
So the Romanovs were in the first revolution. The Romanovs were taken from power.
Okay.
So you had a provisional government set up, which the Soviets
were kind of part of.
Kind of part of it, but they were not a main player. Well, the provisional government decides to continue the war, which was the most unpopular thing. So fast forward like 7 months or so, and in November, the Soviets have another revolution, and basically you have the army just decides to stop fighting. And then the Russian Civil War kicks off, which actually killed more Russians than World War One.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they started going after farmers and
all that shit. That was Stalin. But
no, that was before Stalin.
Yeah. Well,
it was a little bit, it was ramping up, and then Stalin came in and was like, these farmers and everything are the reason why you can't do
both. It just shows that communism doesn't work.
What do you mean?
And the other thing, too, is, the socialism doesn't work either, really. True socialism.
Yeah.
Because it leads to dictatorship.
Yeah.
You know, I don't
know. Hot take. Whoa.
Matt, what are your thoughts on
that? Dude, once again, more information than I can process at the moment. I have to brush up on my World War One or World War
II. You ever listen to Dan Carlin?
I have one of his books.
Dude, Dan Carlin has a fucking awesome series of podcasts on World War One. I've probably told you this maybe 15, 20 times. So much to the point that Matt bought me a World War One book a few years ago.
Remember? Yeah, a couple of them. Yeah.
And I never read it. It's really a thick book.
World War One doesn't make any sense.
The start of it, it's like, why did it happen? Yeah, I don't know. Like, go listen. It's like, it's six episodes. They're like 3 hours long each. But, dude, you would fucking love it.
Isn't he a comedian?
No.
Oh, you're thinking of George Carlin.
I'm thinking of George Carlin. Okay. Dan Carlin. No. I was about to say, I was like, dude, isn't he gone?
Yeah, he died.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was the guy in Ocean's 11.
This guy's doing podcasts on World War One.
World War One. It's honestly, it's kind of weirdly more interesting to me than World War Two because it has such like more crazier, I don't know, stories in a way.
Yeah,
but World War Two. World War Two is such like a. From like a human history perspective, like nothing has really happened like that on that kind of scale and that much, death in a way.
Yeah.
But, you think about just, I think people try to broad stroke it as well. Or you watch like a Netflix special where it's like a 45 minute introduction on like how to become a tyrant by Adolf Hitler. And it's like, okay, you have to really probably spend like, you know, 9 hours talking about his rise to power in a way, and kind of the situation that was happening in Germany also, which allows something like that. And I don't know. I always laugh in a way that, like, when people are like, well, Trump's like Hitler. It's like,
not quite.
I mean, not quite. Like, you know, the only thing you could argue is like the populist message in a way. But the thing also too is, which Hitler Damon like wasn't the guy behind this, is actually a high command German who was one of the heads of the army in World War One named Ludendorff. It's the stab in the back myth. So in World War One, after the war, after they signed the peace treaty, which every German was like embarrassed by, that's why it was like a populist movement where Hitler's saying, I'm going to reverse the Versailles Treaty. So, but this guy named Erich Ludendorff.
Yeah, that's who's Eric. Oh, okay.
This guy named Erich Ludendorff was selling the stab in the back, which is basically saying that we never lost on the battlefield. It's the politicians at home that sold us out and stabbed us in the back. Well, the same thing that basically Britain was doing in World War II, they were doing in World War I. They set up a blockade on all the German ports. So they couldn't import anything. And one of the things that Germany needed to import at the time was food. So, I mean, nationalism dies when people are starving. Yeah. So you have that. And then the other factor that was coming into play at the end of the war was the United States was really ramping up its involvement. So you had, I think the number is like 10,000 U.S. troops landing in France every day.
Yeah.
So just from a pure numbers perspective, they were going to be outnumbered very fast.
Well, and they started using tanks on the battlefield too, which was like a total revolution, because then they could just go over all the barbed wire, all the other things that would like keep people.
But before that even happened, Germany threw one last like haymaker at them. And then it was basically the last time they had any sort of numerical superiority. And they lost like 500,000 troops by casualties, not just dying, in like a 1 month offensive. So
what was that called? There was like a couple it was like everything in World War I is called Battle of
It was just some kind of offensive, because it was on the entire Western Front and it pushed forward. But what they were trying to do was kind of ahead of its time in a way, because they didn't have tanks or anything like that. They had what they call, you know, a Star Wars reference. They're called stormtroopers. So you take like the fastest, strongest guy, give him a bunch of grenades. Not like suicide, like killing himself, but basically you run through, you zigzag. As you're running, you're throwing grenades, you're causing disruptions, but you get behind them. So then now these guys at front start to panic and everyone else just comes in.
And part of that strategy too that I thought was fucking bananas once I learned about it is that they had this artillery barrage thing that they would do as well. That's where shell shock originated from, because what they would do is they would send so much artillery into like the British and French troops in that side shooting it, that they would get drunk from the concussive things and fall asleep sometimes.
Because of the sounds?
Because of the fucking concussive nature of all of these explosions happening. There's one description in that podcast that he talks about that one of the British or French wrote in their like diary, is like, I literally watched an entire forest disappear. Not only did I watch it disappear, the artillery was so thick that I watched tall trees blow out of the ground and stay floating in the air, because so much artillery was coming down, boom, 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 at the same time that fucking trees were floating.
That would rattle you.
Then they would advance after that, and now you're fucking shell-shocked, you're concussed, and now you've got a bunch of job Germans running at you looking to fucking kill you.
But
wild.
You know, just to, Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And
I know.
It's crazy. it's idiotic that that war lasted as long as it did, because it just got to the point that either side was just like not willing to give up
at all.
Because I think that they realized, like, if we lose, it's over for
both sides.
Yeah. Because they're all about their empires. And, you know, but after.
Yeah, because you still had that old way of thinking, right? Like,
Well, if you look at a map of Africa, I think there was one independent space, and it's called something else, but it was basically Ethiopia.
Okay.
Was the only independent area. And the only reason why they were independent is because the Italians tried taking over, and they kicked the Italians out. So other than that, like, every part of Africa was a colonial outpost. And then same thing with, like, Southeast Asia and all that stuff, which, I mean, kind of got us in it. All right. Let me fast forward a little bit. So after when we get in these empire talks, like, you know, if you look at, take like the Vietnam War, for instance, you know, do you know how we got into Vietnam?
No.
Okay. So Vietnam used to be a French colony. So right after World War II, or no, during World War II, they get conquered, right? Well, Japan looks at everything in their area and says, you know what? We're just as good as these white guys over here. These are our colonies now. So they go in and they take over all of the overseas territories that were
the controlled. Japanese.
Yeah. So that was like the Japanese Empire, what they did. So when Japan loses in the war, you know, they decide, okay, you guys can have your colonies back.
That happened during World War One, right?
Two. Okay. Japan was on the Allies' side in World War One.
Okay.
Yeah. Because they had,
because they were stealing stuff from the Germans too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So then
I know something.
So France then starts fighting the Vietnamese because the Vietnamese want their independence. Well, they start fighting them, start losing, and France is like, look, we can't afford, you know, this battle, but you know what? Hey, United States, we need some help. Otherwise, we're going to go to the Soviets and ask them for help.
We probably didn't want the Soviets to help them.
Yeah, because then this is before, like, NATO and, like, you know, the Western, you know, really alliance and stuff. And so we start giving them money. Well, then France is like, all right, we got to get the hell out of here. Well, then you have a North Vietnam and you have a South Vietnam. We start sending advisors over there. But before France left, we were basically paying for their entire military presence over there.
Wow.
So you have this, I don't know, Gulf of Tonkin incident, which is probably staged for us to go over there and get in a war. And then you send troops over there. You know, all that to fight communists, but at the end of the day, the core of their fighting was for their independence. So you have, like, you know, why do we care what government they have?
Yeah.
You know, but
I didn't know that.
But ultimately, it comes down to kind of these geopolitical politics situation where we can't let the Soviets have any sort of foothold, because what if France then became the Soviet Union's ally?
Yeah.
So now you have them on the doorstep of arguably our most important ally. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, yeah.
Shit. Wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck. Learned another few things from Mason.
Thanks, buddy. Oh, man. It's some interesting crap.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, I don't know. Kind of goes back into, like, some of the sketchy shit that our government has done.
Yeah.
But, you know, the reason why I think it's important to know this stuff is, like, if you look at, say, some of the stuff that's going on today.
Afghanistan.
Well, not even that. Even worse than that is the situation going on with Taiwan.
Yeah, where, like, they don't exist, according to China.
Well, China.
If John Cena says anything about Taiwan.
Well. Hold on, let me get to the mic. China is saying that we are going to reunify. And Taiwan's saying, No.
Yeah, they want to pull them back in, right?
Yeah. So,
what is it going to be? COVID-21 that knocks them out, just like fucking it's Hong
basically,
Kong.
Let's just go take it now. It's kind of one of those situations, though. It's okay. Where do you draw the line in a way if you're the United States on a geopolitical level? And then you have to look at too, like, okay, who are our allies over there? We have a presence in Japan still. We have a presence in South Korea. So it's, okay, do we form like, you know, like a NATO 2.0 with our Pacific allies and then include maybe Australia?
It can be NATO, but you put a P in front and it's like the way pneumonia is spelled. Yeah. It's just a silent P. NATO.
But all the other thing NATO. Too... The other thing too to kind of that's kind of crazy to think about is, so if you look at like the car situation, the shortages that we have going on here, almost every microchip is made in Taiwan. So if China takes that over,
then every microchip is made in China.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that's something you don't want.
No.
Yeah,
for sure. No.
So I don't know.
Definitely not.
Your destiny is resting in somebody else's hands. With a lot of things.
Oh, yeah. Almost everything. They make almost like 90% of everything, I think.
Yeah.
Nuts, man.
Well, dude, that's kind of why I don't know. That's where all the talk about bringing stuff back here and manufacturing stuff here comes into play.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's the answer, Mace?
I don't know. Because it's, you get people that are going to argue it's.
Either way.
It violates, you know. Capitalism or free trade or free markets, if the government has a more heavy hand as far as saying what needs to be made here and what have you.
Not even that saying what needs to be made here, but just like a clear, well, I guess it's not clear to most people.
No.
I just look at like
know that until right now.
I just look at like with anything at all, who does it ultimately benefit? You know? If you look at the way the economy is going right now, like who's ultimately benefiting right now? Like there's numbers that say the middle class is like the worst it's ever been. So it's like, okay, if that's the, I don't know. I like to think about like cores. Like what is your core? If you're on like a soccer team or a football team, mm-hmm. who's your core? Like who are your, there's 11 guys on the field at a time, but who are the three you really need
yeah.
at a time? Like that's your core. So like the Bucks, like obviously Tom Brady would be someone, or maybe like the center. And then, I don't know, Mike Evans, everyone else is just interchangeable.
Yeah.
So if you look at say, you know, the country or the economy, what is the core that you need to maintain that is really strong, that's really healthy, that's really robust? The traditional American mindset has always been the middle class.
Yeah.
And I don't know. If it's the weakest it's ever been, it's probably not a good sign.
Yeah, for sure.
And we're kind of, in a way, kind of like, that's not like even doing it to ourselves, but I don't know. People are kind of like woefully ignorant of stuff. Like people don't really want to know, at least in the shorter term. Once it starts really impacting us, I think we will. But I think, it seems like inflation is going to hit us pretty bad pretty soon. I don't know how any of that stuff works, but gas has already gone up like well, crazy
amount. It's the supply chain stuff that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, so I think I've talked about this on here. But like my dad has been sending me articles from like just like ship captains have like this news source. And basically right now in the U.S., half in the port of Los Angeles, if you were to put all the cargo containers end to end, it would stretch halfway across the country.
Yeah.
Isn't that fucking nuts?
Yeah. Well, that's Biden today said he gave a 2-minute prepared speech and no questions, but he said He said the port of LA, Walmart, UPS, and FedEx are going to work 24/7, 7 days a week to figure out this supply chain. And he basically said, like, the private sector needs to step up. Which, I mean, the one thing I will say on that, like, I don't know how Walmart comes into play, but, but like, you know, it is kind of true. Like, if the private sector, like, if we want to be a free market capitalist society and the private sector isn't pulling their weight or not getting things done, then, you know what, maybe, I mean, I'm not saying it should be, like, socialism or government control everything, but it's also, like, you know, don't complain then if your taxes go up.
Yeah.
Like, you know. Yeah. Like.
Well, the other part, well, I just don't know what all the factors are. Because plus you have, it's in LA, so it's in a state that is much more locked down mm-hmm. or has been throughout this whole time. My last job, I was calling people in California. That was, like, my primary people that I was calling. People were like, yeah, I'm just not flying. Like, you know, or, yeah, nothing's really going on. Owner is 90 years old in this plane, and he doesn't want to go anywhere because he doesn't want to die. But everything's pretty shut down there. But also, like, I don't know if this comes into play, if people are getting, like, paid and getting, like, the stimulus checks for this stuff, if that comes into play. Like, I don't know where that intersection would be in terms of workers, or if it's something to do with pay, if it's something to do with, like, regulations or...
I think something that I read, it is part of that, where they don't have enough dock workers to unload the stuff. They don't have enough drivers to drive anything.
So these boats are just waiting out, one behind the next, right?
Yeah.
Imagine being
to hear that too.
Fucking captain right now.
I'm so upset.
And those boats are freaking huge.
Huge, dude. Yeah. Those are cities on the water.
Yeah, think about how big one of those crates are. Yeah. And loading up 100 of those crates on a boat.
Yeah.
Well, what pisses me off more than anything, though, is, like, some of the stuff that's on there is, like, stuff that we can make here.
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, food on there.
Yeah.
Or there's, like, medicine.
I know that so this is called a Rodecaster Pro, and I know that there are a shitload of these somewhere in the port of Los Angeles, because it's, like...
Really?
Maybe they figured it out, but, like, I was looking for these, like, a month or two ago, and I talked to some guy at the Podcast Movement about this, and I'm like, hey, can I order one of those? He's like, yeah, I can't really tell you when it's going to be here, because we've got a whole bunch of them, and they're sitting somewhere in a shipping container in the port of Los Angeles. And that was, like, the first thing that, like, put it in a real term for me, because unless you order something or buy something that's impacted by this stuff, you're not really thinking about it. And then once you have something that you're looking to do, you're like, oh, shit.
If you think it's bad right now, and if it
just doesn't, wait.
Just wait till Christmas.
I just heard this.
Yeah, where people can't get any gifts or anything at all. Or if they want to get, say, a TV, a new TV, and there's only 100 of them in the entire state,
do it now.
The prices are going to go up astronomically.
Think about that.
Yeah. So that's where the really, like, the inflation is. When we think of inflation, we think about, oh, there's printing so much money. But the inflation is, the core of it is the supply chain shortages.
Yeah.
You know, because there's not enough anything. Like, what did you tell me that new car, like, only one or something?
Yeah, there's some dealerships that are only getting, you know, 1 to 10 new cars a month.
Yeah.
1 to 10 cars a month?
New cars, yeah. I knew a guy 2 weeks ago, one new car in his lot. Franchise.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's why what were you telling me? If you go there with a used car at all and try to sell it to them, they'll overpay or something?
Yeah. It's like anything. They need the inventory. Somebody's going to come buy it.
It's kind of on the way to Cuba. That's kind of how Cuba is.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
But the only problem is I can't fucking open up the hood of my car. It's a giant computer.
Yeah, now they are for sure.
Then you need a microchip in there from Taiwan.
Yep, that's the next step. Is I need a microchip planted in my fucking head. All right, let's wrap this thing up.
All right.
Thanks for doing this, guys.
Yeah, good seeing you
guys. Hit 2 hours?
We're at an hour and 41.
Oh, man. All right.
Sheesh.
It's a win for Matt in his home life.
Yeah.
Why?
Just wait here for 20 more minutes.
Yeah, let's hang out for like 20. There you go.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.
Adios.